Welcome back to the second hour of We the People Radio. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us. Pretty simple.
Yep, pretty simple.
The .com owner still has not let go of his domain. He's ruining my world. So that bitterness is connected to only me, Aaron Ryan.
There you
it's
go.
Just my opinion. It's the only one I get.
That's right. I don't share that view.
Yeah, exactly. And who are you?
Yeah, I'm Bill Cunningham. And I want to take a second
He's Bill. Don't call him William.
Our
and
sponsor,
we have William. Don't call him Bill.
Don't make it technical.
Yeah.
Our sponsor this hour is Powerhouse Solar. Bruce and Sue over there can do you a great job on any of your solar power needs.
And they live here, and they're not
They're
not going door to door and moving to some
people.
Other place.
And you can call them at 275-5600 or catch them online at powerhousesolar.com.
Check. And they're right on the front page of our site in case you are not driving with a pen and you're not driving with a phone. But you are probably driving with a hamburger and a little dog. You can still do that.
That's still legal. Yeah, I saw a lady the other day throw a chicken bone out the window.
Fantastic.
You can eat fried chicken, too.
Yeah, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Just don't talk on the phone. Don't touch it. You're not allowed to touch the phone.
That's right.
Because
we're in California.
That's right. You can't have it in your hand. So I guess
you're lucky you can still listen to the radio and drive.
Exactly. Don't touch the knob, though. You probably can't touch the knob. We're going to need cars with telepathic ability so that we can think our stuff going on. And all of our music comes from The Indomitable.
Oh, Bob Martin.
You're still Bob?
I was sending you a telepathic message. I was trying it out, see if I could get it to work here. Because if I can, then maybe it'll work in the truck.
Yay.
Yeah. All right. William K.
Yes.
You just start out wherever you want because we keep skipping this Russian thing. We keep getting derailed.
I have no problem with getting into the science. We can do that in a moment. I just wanted to sort of round out something that I had started talking about earlier. But this requires a mentioning of one specific historical fact and then a general historical trend.
Will it make all the snowflakes melt?
Historical fact. Go ahead.
Is it going to make all the snowflakes melt? Or are they going to freak out when you say it?
They will be stunned.
Nice.
Okay, the shock might even cure them of their depression. Who knows?
Oh.
I hope not.
Do say.
These are the people who are in need of a wake-up call.
Yes.
The diplomatic revolution of 1756. Now, most people are not aware of that. It's sort of pre the American War of Independence, although it's one of the things that caused it. But what happened in Europe, the four main powers at the time, Austria, France, Prussia, and Britain, suddenly changed partners, like in a very quick period. The ones that had been bitter enemies for long periods of time suddenly switched partners and became allies. That was known as the capital D, capital R, diplomatic revolution. It has happened in the past that countries that have had long periods of animosity suddenly overnight become allies. Okay, the second point is that over the last hundreds of years in Europe, in Central and Eastern Europe, there's been this very deeply entrenched divide between the sort of the Russian Slavic world and the Germanic Central European world. The Kingdom of Sweden fought 15 wars against the Tsar. The Austrians had repeated wars against the Tsars. The Prussians did as well. It wasn't as though they were always at war with one another. And there were the Germanic countries and the Russian countries. But it was definitely the long-term trend. And this is something that isn't going to get washed away by any sort of change anytime soon. There's still this entrenched animosity between those two blocks. And during World War One and World War Two, of course, America was allied with Russia against the Central European powers. Once the Cold War started, the Americans and the Soviet Union became bitter enemies for over 40 years. Right now, there is this tension between the sort of Central European powers and Russia. And their great fear, the mortifying fear of the Europeans, is that the Americans are going to switch sides. And, what's going to happen in America over the next year is a lot of people are really going to sit down and say, remind me, why is it that the Russians are the enemies and that the EU are the allies? Like, what is going on? Why is that the case? Why are we not, why are we involved in this at all? Why is America sending hundreds of tanks, through Poland to the Russian border? Trump is leading this. And I very much support Donald Trump, and I think he's doing exactly the right thing. He's really questioning, why is it that we're having such, you know, animosity with Russia? Why can't we get along with Russia? But it's closely tied to the climate thing. If America's going to walk away from the climate campaign because it doesn't make any economic sense for America, Russia was bribed into the climate thing. They got the same deal as China and India. You don't have to do anything. You know, if you look at the countries with the least amount of solar power and wind power and biofuels, there's Russia. They have done absolutely nothing to cooperate with this. On several occasions, Putin has made the same sort of remarks that you get from Trump. Like, Putin has repeatedly said, hey, this is Russia. It's too cold here. Like, we don't care if the planet's going to increase a degree or two. But they bribed him with saying you can get membership in the World Trade Organization. What the Russians really want more than anything is acceptance into the mainstream world community. That's something that Trump can really offer them. So while the Trump's position on climate is going to cause him make a lot of enemies in the EU, if he warms up to Putin at the same time, that's going to make even a lot more enemies. But Russia and the U.S. are both these natural energy superpowers to whom this whole climate thing is just a nuisance. So those are the longer, the grander sort of geopolitical trends. And that's why you've got all this Russian stuff going on in the mass media. It's not just driven by the Europeans, but they are mortified of the possibility that the Americans and the Russians might really start getting along, that they might really start talking about what are the best energy policies for their countries. That's very bad news for the Europeans.
We might take our toys and go home from the climate folderol.
And then they're stuck. You know, if neither Russia nor America is going to cooperate with the climate thing, like, the whole project is pointless, even from the Europeans' perspective.
Well, they're counting on us to fund it. I mean, bottom line is they just want to strip us down so that they can redistribute our money.
Don't forget, China's a major player in this too, but it seems like everything I hear about China is they're like exempt until, you know, 2030
China
or something.
They don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
They would never have signed on to this.
No. Well, if they did, they wouldn't have done it anyway.
that's probably true. So where are the Canadians in this whole thing? I know it's a big place and you have a lot of variety, but your leadership's kind of down.
We have now of Justin Trudeau, who is the son of a previous prime minister, who I have profiled on my website. He is very much a tool and instrument of the Europeans. Canada is very divided east to west. You're talking to someone from Western Canada, where we do have a lot of oil, coal, natural gas, what have you, as opposed to sort of the Toronto-Montreal corridor, mm-hmm. which dominates Canadian politics. But we've got a prime minister and a party in power in Ottawa that is, they are very as committed to the whole climate agenda as was Obama. And they are now in a quandary as to what to do now that Trump has been elected. They haven't changed their tune yet, but they're it's a big difficulty because America is beyond just being our major trading partner. They're the source of almost 90% of our exports and imports. We are completely integrated into the American economy and to the American culture. But yet we've got a political party in power now that is a neo-colonial governor appointed by the Europeans, basically. And even in the province, there was this freak election that we had in Alberta, the province I'm in Canada, and they had the political party that won are also these hardcore environmentalists, and it was only because the mainstream parties had sort of split and sort of fighting amongst themselves, and these guys came up the middle and won, and you really get the sense of, before the American Revolution, you had governors, England would send a governor, you would send a president to America, and he would tell you what the policies were going to be, and he was doing this on behalf of Britain. He wasn't doing it for you It wasn't your interest he was trying to implement. That's the kind of premier we have in this province right now. This is someone who is imposing climate policies. Like they're implementing a carbon tax. This is like one of the biggest oil producing provinces in the world, jurisdictions in the world, and implementing this multi-billion-dollar carbon tax, gasoline fuel tax, and they're going to give all of the revenues from that to the wind power industry. And this is extremely unpopular here. And if you want to talk about a place in the world where this makes absolutely no sense, I mean, Alberta, if you include the oil sands, it's got more oil than Iraq. This is one of the ultimate natural energy superpowers of the world. Tremendous amount of oil, coal, natural gas. These are the industries we should be promoting. We're having a very hard time getting pipelines built. The Keystone XL was supposed to come to Alberta. It was supposed to go right through Edmonton, where I'm currently sitting. And that was, of course, blocked by the Obama administration. Trump is going to okay that. But we've got a premier in this province right now who, you know, pays lip service to fighting for pipelines, but really isn't doing anything about it. It probably is not a sustainable situation politically, and ultimately, hopefully, they will be removed. But they've brought in hundreds of environmental activists and given them these rather plum positions all over the government.
Sure.
These are people who are on record as being militantly opposed to the petroleum industry.
We see that. We see that here. You know, we see these guys getting paid to go protest. And, hey, and, you know, California just gave Eric Holder a job. So yet again are leading the way.
Good news, though, because he is such a legal moron.
I know.
He's only going to undermine efforts they are trying to come up with to thwart Trump.
Exactly.
Well, he'll just say whatever they pay
him
to say.
He'll just make it look all the more sensible for the northern part of the state to be split away so we can be free. What's that?
California independence movement.
I know. I hope they go. Weird. No, we're going to stay. See, then we don't have to split away from them. We'll just wave at them as they sail away.
There's an independence movement within the independence movement.
Well, there's an independence movement that's real, and then there's the psychos that think they can become their own country. But, you know, whatever they do, the more they do stuff like that, the more it makes those of us up here in the northern part of the state, you know, look like the normal people. And it's kind of like, you know, could we get away from the crazy people? Would that be okay? It might not be such a tough argument here shortly. We need to take
the
a really
quick... North California.
Exactly.
There you are.
It happened in lots of other places, Carolina.
North and South Dakota, East and West Virginia.
Exactly.
Why not a North and South California?
Exactly.
You get two extra senators.
Well, and that wouldn't be bad. We'd actually get two that have been here. So that would be
There are independence movements in Western Canada. There's an Alberta Independence Party and a Western Canada. They flared. I remember about 20, 30 years ago, they really flared up in popularity, but they were royally squelched by the establishment.
I would
actually advocate Western Canada joining the United States.
Oh, there you go.
Which is not entirely a popular opinion up here. We had some leading politicians that advocated that before, but that would be, it would emancipate us from Montreal.
Right. See, that's the whole thing. It's like, you know, we're not actually going anywhere. We're just trying to get away from somebody else. It's kind of a strange logic.
Nothing personal.
Yeah, really. We just want to get away from you. We need to take a really quick break. We're going to come back with our guest, William Kay. This is kind of a fun look at what's going on in the climate debate. You know, we can talk about the silly science all day, but the political ramifications are kind of fun. William's site is ecofascism.com. Very interesting. Lots of good stuff there. And you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Be right back.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted.
That'll keep us on topic. So what do you think the guys on the Pacific Rim, you know, what are they going to do if the Russians and the United States just step up and say, you know, we're not doing the climate cap and trade thing and all that jazz?
Every country is going to have a different strategy towards this. Like, keep in mind, like the Chinese, they always had a path. They were bought into this because they immediately shifted their manufacturing towards solar panels and towards wind turbines, and they're trying to make a profit at it that way. They could very easily adapt to this. Japan is a bit of a different story. They're very much in the same boat as the Europeans. You know, advanced manufacturing country without any natural resources. So they're, you know, they can adapt. Even the Europeans can adapt. But Japan is a country that they have made a huge investment in the electric vehicle and hybrid vehicle market, and that's all predicated on the notion that there's going to be government policies around the world that are going to subsidize or regulate that industry into something much bigger than it is. Right now, hybrid vehicles, electric vehicles, they're only about 1% of global sales of cars. But the plan is that they, you know, like Europe is going to be 100% electric vehicles. Right now, Norway is 12% of new car sales.
Oh, wow.
So there are some of these countries that are really, really putting, well, they give all kinds of subsidies.
Sure.
You know, they're basically lowering the cost for them. They're building all these fast charging stations for free with government money. Without a huge investment of government money, nobody would be buying these products. But Japan, a lot of their big companies have sunk a lot of money into what they think is going to be the future, which is the electric vehicle or at a minimum the hybrid vehicle. So they would not be popular. They wouldn't look forward to it, but they could adapt to it, you know. They're going to have to adapt to it.
Well, here, the more electric cars and stuff they get on the road, now they're realizing, oh, whoops, we don't have enough money in our highway fund because the gas taxes are down. So now they're looking at, you know, vehicle miles traveled, taxes and stuff like that to try to backfill it. I mean, it just seems like every, quote, fix they come up with creates more problems that they need to
fix. It just costs more to operate the way we're operating. It's backwards.
Well, the plan in Europe right now, they are planning to build over 100,000 of those superchargers. Like, the problem is it takes so long to charge up an electric vehicle, sometimes hours and hours, and you only get a very short bit of mileage out of them. That's not a marketable product. So the solution, as far as the geniuses in Europe is concerned, is to build like literally over 100,000 of these superchargers and put them all over the place so you can quickly charge up your car in a matter of minutes and not hours. But that's all government money. And that, you know, that simply would not be happening.
We're still looking at the cost of these electric cars is so much more than what you could buy a like-sized conventional car for. You know, most folks can't afford an electric car.
Only the ideologues, only the people who were so devoted
mm-hmm. to this environmental cause are going to buy one now, unless there's all kinds of tax credits, tax breaks. This is not something the market would ever do on its own. And the reality is the price of fuels are probably going to keep falling. We're finding more of them, these deposits. We're getting far more, far improved technologies of extracting them. This very much argues against the electric vehicle. You know, the old saying is that, you know, that the Stone Age did not end because we ran out of rocks. You know, and we're not going to phase out the petroleum age because we run out of petroleum. Some point down the future, yeah, they're probably going to come up with, you know, electric cars that actually work or whatever. But that's way into the future, and there's no need for us to be accelerating this process.
No, and
there's really no need for any country that's got, you know, a superabundance of fossil fuels to be trying to phase out fossil fuel.
And I think you just create more resistance when you force people to participate in these failing programs. I mean, people don't want to spend their money on something that they know is giving them a bad return. And I think that's what they're doing.
Yeah, it's like I say, it's a political thing. And if you're forcing people to subsidize somebody else's political agenda, ultimately, you just had an election in the United States. The good guys won. And I think a lot of these subsidies are going to come to an end. It's going to be a very raucous period. There's going to be a real resistance to this. And people should really brace themselves for that. All these groups that are showing up to disrupt the inauguration. I was looking at all their sort of communiques they're putting out. Every one of them, I went to, Occupy Inauguration and Disrupt J20. They've all got these long spiels about climate change. This is why we're going to Washington,
right,
to, do this. And from my point of view, if you are willing to commit an act of violence, like throw a Molotov cocktail at a police car because of climate change,
right,
you are a mass media zombie.
Right.
I mean, this is not something that is really impacting your life at all. You have been driven around the bend by watching these, global warming commercials on TV masquerading as news reports. And that, and these are the ones who think that they're the rebels. They're fighting against the man out there. No, these are puppets of the mainstream media.
Right.
Sure.
And they're so incensed by this that they're willing to commit acts of violence. That's my definition of fascism.
Well, historically, too, this group makes a lot of noise. But then when it comes down to the actual protest, show up in front of Trump, they never show up. It's like there's something better on.
And if they do, they just break everything and leave a bunch of garbage.
Yeah, I mean, but they don't show. And instead of having thousands, they have a few hundred, and then the media says it was a million.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, there's that. Oh, then a lot of them are paid to show up as well. We're going to see. I think there's actually a change going on. I'm certainly noticing an increase in intensity and desperation on the part of that community. And there's also a huge infusion of money coming in, and it's going to the more radical elements and the more sort of volatile elements of that community. I really will be watching, the inauguration. I am not going to venture any prediction, but it could really, really get out of hand. If you look, Washington, D.C., 93% of the population voted for Clinton. All along that eastern seaboard, like from New York City, Philadelphia, Baltimore, down to D.C., Clinton was taking over 80% of the vote in those cities. Those are majority non-white cities. I know I was noticing that the Internet's coming around to bite us on the ass because they've got a lot of crowd-funded busing now to the inauguration. So they're going to be able to get you on a bus from New York to D.C. for like $10.
Well, yeah. The good news is they'll be trapped in traffic because it's going to be hell.
Yeah, and then most of those folks can't afford to stay there anyway. I mean, it's,
no, they won't. Well, they could stay in jail, maybe.
Yeah, but
those are precisely the people who are capable of us. It's a question: what does the elite big green really want to see? My takeaway from a lot of this stuff that came out about the leaked dossier and that Trump has got some enemies in very high places,
mm-hmm,
in the government. And so we know he's had enemies in the media. It's a question of how crazy do they want to get this thing?
Mm-hmm.
Do they really want to see, serious riots in the street? Do they want to shock Trump and the administration but with just, a real blowout riot?
Well, they usually go too far. That's kind of their hallmark is they get all, they get their beer goggles on and they think their beer muscles. They think, it's like, we can take them. And they can't, they do things, that make, that really hurt, actually wind up hurting their cause. And then some of the people who haven't totally bought in, but think it was a good idea, look at them and go, I was talking.
Yeah, it's going to turn off mainstream America if there's violence. I don't know. I'm conflicted about what's going to happen. I don't want to venture any predictions, but I'm sure looking at some of the stuff coming out of these websites, and they are going to, it's pretty obvious they're committing themselves to disobedience, like blocking the roads, trying to cause some major disruptions there. And well, there's no end there.
Well, I watched an interview the other day. I forget who they were talking to, but the premise was there's been more tumultuous times in this country than this Trump election. And so much of what we're hearing about the inauguration and, you know, what's going to happen and all this is all media driven. It's probably going to go off without a hitch.
It's a little bit like the big storms that we're all going to die.
They're all talking like there's going to be a big uproar, and there will be some protest. I don't think it's going to be near what these guys are predicting. I think the media is blowing this thing up to where it's just a big nothing. I mean, look at how many people say, "Oh, I'm not going to the." I'm not going to the inauguration. Well, great, because there's really not going to be room for
you. We did have people cancel tickets. I mean, there were people that had tickets. They go through their, local congressional office.
Oh, I think there'll be some protesting.
They had tickets, and some people said, you know what, I have security concerns. And then there were other people that were like, we're going, we don't care.
I'm more concerned with some kind of a terrorist act than I am social disobedience.
Well, there's that too.
I think when you get that many people in one place, you're just a target. So, you know.
Hey, we don't want to turn this show into fear porn.
No, stop it.
No, I was trying to do that. I'm not sure.
We'll be afraid at the end.
It may well be. I've certainly seen what Bill was describing there as the distinct possibility that it's going to be all bark and no bite. We'll see on that.
It'll be interesting to know. We need to take a really quick break, but I was going to ask you, I had read this the other day, the thing about Jane Fonda visiting the oil sands and the people up there in Alberta just went berserk and hammered her. It was kind of fun. I've been reading a lot of the articles online. Misinformed. Even the helicopter pilot.
Buzzed her.
Didn't have anything nice to say. So anyway, I'll post that on our page for today.
Okay.
We'll be back with William Kay. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. See, if it was a conservative protest, we'd be playing this and having a barbecue and, you know, everybody would bring their kids and be all happy. But this can be one of those, if they do show up, run away, far away. Yeah. All right. So what about Jane Fonda?
The evil Jane Fonda. Alberta.
Mm-hmm.
About a week ago and... no doubt financed by the environmentalist one group or another, and they no doubt flew her very low in a helicopter over what's called these tailing ponds, which are used to sort of, you know, separate the bitumen out with water, and it's kind of a messy, there's clay and crap in them, and they just look like these little miniature lakes, but they're really full of a lot of black gunk. And they no doubt showed her those, and she was horrified, or they showed her some of the open pit mines. The thing with oil sands, some of it's brought up by drilling. A lot of it's brought up. It's just, you go down about 70 or 80 yards, all of the earth, the dirt itself, it's very sandy, but it's got oil in it. So they just have giant front-end loaders, scoop it up, put it in the back of dump trucks. The dump trucks dump it into these watery solutions, and it separates the oil out. It's not like conventional drilling for oil. You're actually just scooping up big amounts of dirt and soaking that in water. I'm simplifying.
Sure.
So it does leave these giant open pit mines. There's four or five of those. A lot of the modern oil sands is done through steam injected drilling, which isn't going to cause quite the disturbance of the earth. But the opponents to oil sands. These are people who are opposed to the petroleum industry in general. They had long told us that we were running out of oil, but it's these unconventional forms of oil, like the oil sands and shale oil, what have you, now are leading us to the belief that we've got almost unlimited amounts of oil. The estimates of how much oil there are on those oil sands run in the hundreds of billions of barrels, so we are never going to run out of those. So the environmental movement has a particular hate on for oil sands because it means North America will never run out of oil. What we just need is more pipelines to get to the area. But there is quite a disturbance of the earth around the sites of the mines and that. But, you know, I used to work up around Wainwright, Alberta, which is very near some of these. And, you know, what people, it might look nice from the sky, but it's a very inhospitable terrain. It's very much like Siberia or somewhere like that. It's just these very dense, stunted pine forests that are full of various sloughs and swamps. And the moment you're off the road, you're in this, forbidden zone. You can't hardly move through it. And it's very dense mosquitoes. It's a very unpleasant place to be, even in the summertime. In the winter, it's lethal. It's so cold up there.
Mm-hmm.
So, we're really dealing with an area that's almost completely unpopulated. There weren't even any Indians living there, before this place was settled. The Indians that did move there followed the fur trade. We're dealing with a very inhospitable piece of the earth that isn't really going to bother anybody. It's like, you're ruining my swamp, man. You're ruining my desert. This is a very unpleasant part. Actually, there's a few, over the years I've read all these environmental articles or counter-environmental articles. There's a whole genre of enviro-skeptical articles where people actually, you read about someplace like the Alaska Wildlife Refuge, and one guy actually went up there and looked at it. And, for most of the year, lethally cold. Unless you're completely dressed up, with heaters and that, you're going to freeze to death in an hour. And even in the summer, the black flies are so thick that you can actually suffocate. They'll fly up your nose and kill you.
Well, that's an awesome.
And there's another guy who went about this place in eastern Colorado where, they were going to put these diffuser oil and gas installations there. And you go there, and it's this sort of semi-arid desert. There's some cactuses and this and that. And they were so worried about the deer population, but in the winter, the deer were hiding around and inside the oil and gas installation to get out of the wind. They were happy to have it there. And it's the same with the caribou herds. They'll walk right by an oil derrick. I mean, they couldn't care less, about these things. But quite often the areas of the world that these people are trying to save, they're, just godforsaken, inhospitable, nasty parts of the world that nobody would go visit if there wasn't some, valuable natural resources there. Nobody was living there. And, if you've ever experienced and had to really deal with, the really hard bush of northern Alberta, the idea that you could somehow damage that is a joke. Even northern Alberta alone is the size of Montana. And I suppose if you're flying low in a helicopter and you go over these nice green spaces and then bonk, suddenly you're in this big open pit mine. They describe it as Mordor. This is this horrible place, But the reality is it's an improvement. As far as I'm concerned, it's good landscaping. They can dig all they want there. It's not a place that was of any utility to humans before this.
Well, I guess she went
earlier settlers.
Yeah,
this oil is, they call it tar, but it's really a really thick, carbon-intensive oil called bitumen, or pitch. And early pioneers were going through that area, and they would actually sink in up to their knees in some of this petroleum puddle, like these sort of, it's almost like quicksand.
Mm-hmm.
One early explorer stuck a raft pole, full length of it, 10, 12 feet to the bottom of one of these poles. Other ones complained, they tried to pull their canoe up on a beach on the Athabasca River, and they all sunk into their shins in this gooey black crap, right? So it isn't as though, people are worried about, they're going to spill oil in that river. All along the banks of that river, you find these patches of this thick, tarry, gooey stuff. That's already there naturally, and they're worried that, the tailing pond might leak. And a bit of oil might leak into the Athabasca River.
But see, you don't hear that.
It's saturated with it.
Well, that's what this guy was saying. He said the people were just furious because, you know, after the big fire in Fort McMurray and everything, they're like, we don't need to be bashed by you and your, and because I guess they had, it was Greenpeace and Sierra Club and somebody else who set this thing up. And so I guess that we have all sorts of celebs who fly in and out and, and pontificate on something they know nothing about.
We want a classic example. Leonardo DiCaprio
came up
to northern Alberta.
I hate that guy.
And we have a phenomenon here that you don't probably have, you don't have in California, called a Chinook. And what that is a very warm wind that somehow winds its way through the Rocky Mountains. And when it's super cold in Alberta, every now and then we are saved by a 2 or 3 day Chinook. And you can actually feel the warm wind in your face. But we really look forward to them. You get a couple of them every year. We're experiencing one right now. Leonardo, the climatologist, the genius, shows up. He experiences a Chinook, and he immediately gets on the news saying, you know, this is global warming. It's happening right now. And this is something that happens 2 or 3 times every winter up here, and we really look forward to them up here. But just, you know, an absolute ignoramus. He interpreted that as evidence of global warming.
Well, they wanted, all these guys said that they were all going to leave and move to Canada if Trump got elected. And, immediately the internet was flooded with all sorts of,
We're going to build a wall to keep them out.
Well, it was funny because right after that, there were all sorts of things popping up online on the actual requirements to move to Canada and what you had to do and how long it took and what was required. And it was kind of like, hey, just in case you were thinking that, you know, you could actually do this. But, you know, it didn't stop them. They still said it, and they're still here.
Yeah, none of them came, though.
I know.
Well,
maybe
they're still
that.
Planning it, you know. I know that Bernie Sanders, he bought another house right on Lake Champlain so he could actually canoe across the border. Maybe he's thinking about that.
Well, he's old. He's not much of a threat.
Knows? He's buying all these houses these days. Poor Bernie. biggest political fraud I've ever heard.
The guy who's never had a real job.
I saw Michael Moore is going to do a big protest next Thursday in front of Trump Towers, him and Alec Baldwin.
Michael Moore has to do a big protest because he's a big guy.
Everything he does is big.
Everything is big.
He's going to go right for the cafeteria and the food court at Trump Towers, and he's not going to leave.
He's going to stay just sit in at the cafeteria counter.
It's an eat-in. It's an eat-in with Mike.
He'll show them. He'll eat all their food.
Well, I still think it's funny because the poor guy who wrote that movie Idiocracy periodically pops up on Twitter and he's like, it was never designed to be a documentary. But
I'm just appalled. You know, growing up, I used to listen to Bruce Springsteen, and I can remember, you know, being enough of a naive that when I first saw Roger and Me, you know, you thought that, you know, here's someone who's really sort of fighting for the working man. Those guys have so discredited themselves. They have discredited every bit of, you know, artistic product they have ever created. They aren't just embarrassing themselves now. You know, they are, you know, besmirching everything they have ever done. They've exposed themselves as being these sort of, you know, agents of the oligarchy. They had an opportunity on this election to really take a stand for, you know, the American working people, and they didn't. They jumped over the barricade, and they supported, you know, the candidate of Goldman Sachs and the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, and they're still not letting go of it. And they're just exposing themselves as being utter charlatans and frauds.
Yeah, and the funny part is that, you know, with all this thing with the Russians, we've talked about this for the last couple of weeks or so, with different people, different perspectives. And with all this talk about the Russians, quote, hacking their system, they keep forgetting to mention that everything that came out was actually true.
Oh, yeah, it was all
Nobody
true information. It was just stuff they were hiding.
They're implying that the Russians made it up and then put it out. It's like, no.
Once those people learned about it,
yeah,
they
those things
were
all
pissed.
Real.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just funny.
I wholly agree with that statement. And I also think that I agree with what Julian Assange said. It wasn't the Russians. It was an internal leak from the Democratic Party people. Like, that seems to me a lot more plausible.
Yeah. Bernie voters scorned.
Yeah, it was scorned. Bernie Sanders supporters actually released it. They've never proved it. Even though Trump is now sort of going along with the line that the Russians were hacking, that was never established. But yeah, it's a very important point. It wasn't like they were manufacturing evidence. They were revealing the truth about the Democrats.
Yeah, isn't that what they're all about, is telling the truth? I mean,
yeah, they're supposed to be journalists, and they got this scoop, but now they're sort of twisting it all around. Now, you're in for very interesting times south of the border, because this, you know, it's the intelligence agencies themselves are complicit in this, and Trump is really going to have to clean house. He's going to have to get rid of a lot of those people.
Well,
anybody who was involved in putting that, you know, Golden Showers document on Obama's desk, anybody who was involved in getting it there has to be fired.
Yeah. No, I think I agree. It comes the 20th, there's going to be so much turmoil for probably the first few months.
I don't know.
As he goes through the rank and file and starts making changes.
A lot of the rank, but see, a lot of the worst actors.
Oh, they're quitting.
They're gone.
They're leaving before the axe falls.
Ran into one, just for the little caveat before the break here, for the people who follow the Klamath Dams issue and are not on my email list. You should be, and you get the stuff current, you know. But anyway. John Bezdek, the guy that was with Department of the Interior that masterminded a whole bunch of secret meetings with the tribes and the environmentalists and the bureaucrats to remove the dams. And I've been chasing these guys around for, I don't know, several years now. One of our staff ran into him in Washington, D.C. last week, and he said, oh, I retired when Trump got elected. So this is a guy who's been the anti-dam guy, wants to take out all our hydropower dams. And now he's going to go to work for Westland's Water District, biggest water district in California, and help them create water storage.
To put dams uh-huh. in.
So yeah. It's kind of like, I guess the oldest profession is still still the oldest
yeah,
profession,
yeah,
huh?
That, or else he's,
when in
he's,
doubt, go back to prostitution,
they're
huh?
Helping.
This is crazy.
We say in Canada, the oldest lie is I'm from the federal government and I'm here to help. I mean, a lot of these environmentalists.
Well, so some of them are gone. Some of these bad guys are gone.
Help.
No, and you know, yeah. I think right now the media is struggling for stories, and that's why so much ridiculous stuff's being reported on. But come the 20th, they're going to have lots to report
on. Yeah,
because
the alternate story is the thing about the winning, right? They're going to have so much winning, they're going to say, please, Mr. President, no more winning.
Please stop. We can't win anymore.
We can't win anymore. We're going to take a really quick break. We'll come back with our guest, William Kay. You're listening to We the People Radio. You can find us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
All aboard!
If Hillary was elected, we would have used the heck out of that song. So it's just going to languish now. We'll have to work it in.
That was for Jane.
That was for Jane, though. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, we were just kind of laughing off the air that we bash more. This is like a record breaker show. We have really hammered everybody. Anybody left? Did we not hammer somebody that should be on the list?
Oh, gee, I have a very long list
I do
of people to beat upon, so we can't get started on that.
We'll have to create our own basket of deplorables.
It would be a truckload.
So that we never got into the science of it, which was okay.
That's
you know,
all right.
Actually,
it's all fake.
As far as I'm concerned, the science is so settled on the other side that, you know, this is so obviously a concocted scientific hypothesis that is not substantiated by the fact that I always try to go beyond the scientific debate and just, you know, presume people understand that. So my community, more than any, is the skeptical community themselves. But just to throw a word out there to that is that, you know, I'm a member of Friends of Science, and our motto is, you know, climate change, when was the climate not changing? You know, the Earth is 4.5 billion years old. There's constantly been this fluctuation in temperature and atmospheric conditions. What we're seeing now over the last 100, 150 years is well within the range of normal natural climate changes. There's nothing that we are actually witnessing that indicates there's something abnormal going on. And it's also very clear from the record, historical and fossil record, that the warmer the climate, the more abundant the plant and animal life on the planet is. So a slightly warming planet, if indeed that is what we are experiencing, is the best of all conditions.
Oh, yeah.
It's far better to have a warming planet than a cooling one.
And it's the same thing with the CO2. I mean, that has been debunked so many times. It's not going to hurt a thing. Actually, would
two points. No, it's actually going to be fertilizer in the air.
Exactly.
CO2 mixed with water gives you the basic sugars through photosynthesis that is the source of all life on Earth. A lot of studies done, a lot of greenhouses pump CO2 in there. There's been studies that show that the Earth, in fact, is slightly greening. Some deserts are disappearing, probably due to human CO2 emissions. So the overall benefits of CO2 emissions greatly outstrip whatever heat they're trapping,
sure.
And the warming is probably a benefit too.
It's kind of interesting that we all learned this as little kids, and somehow they've convinced a bunch of grown-ups that everything they learned in science is somehow different, the exact opposite of what they learned.
National scientific academies are like soldiers in a parade square. Governments can order them around. The European governments, you know, collectively told their scientific establishments in the late 1970s to begin developing this global warming hypothesis and hysteria. This was orders from on high. And the idea that scientists is basically just a civil servant. They are propagandists for the government, or they can certainly be recruited into that. And there's a lot of history for that.
Sure.
So to the extent to which there ever was a scientific consensus, which there never really was, it was only because billions of dollars were flowing from governments into these scientific academies, into the grant-giving agencies that built up these, you know, tens of thousands of scientists who make their living, you know, scratching around for evidence of the global warming hypothesis.
That's the truly sad part, is that we've, you know, bastardized science as a field. And told him, you know, you can't study anything unless you study this and come up with this conclusion, which is obviously not science.
William, thank you very much. We got to have
you
back. We've got so much to talk about. And, of course, after the 20th, we'll have even more to talk about.
Yes, we will.
Let's take a good hard look. My prediction is a lot more disruption and violence than one might expect.
All right. We're going to hold
you.
Thanks for coming on, William.
My pleasure. Bye.
Thanks very much. You can find all the information about our guest, William Kay, at wethepeopleradio.us. And thanks again to Powerhouse Solar.